This is Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Dr. Billy Taylor was more than a distinguished pianist, an inventive composer, and highly regarded media pioneer. He wasn't just an advocate for jazz, justice, and civil rights. He was a mentor to generations of musicians, an ambassador for jazz, and an esteemed educator.
Jazz is a way of playing music, and a repertory of pieces that defines that way of playing as it's developed over the years.
1982, the first episode of Taylor Made Piano, one of the many radio shows Dr. Taylor hosted on NPR. He spent much of his almost 70-year career teaching jazz to audiences on the radio, on television, in the concert hall, the classroom, and in the community. He even threw concerts in the streets of Harlem.
The Jazzmobile. Every summer since 1954, it has traveled to the inner city to put on concerts.
Now, it's hard to articulate the enormity of his impact on jazz, but don't take it from me.
Dr. Taylor was a bit of a puzzle because he was at once this giant of an artist and musician and advocate for jazz and the consummate teacher. And he was also the humblest, dearest, warmest human being that you can imagine meeting.
That's Teresa Reed, the ghostwriter for Dr. Taylor's autobiography. She's also the dean of the School of Music at the University of Louisville.
I think Billy Taylor was a Renaissance man. This guy, it was like Thomas Jefferson. I mean, he knew so much about so many things in life, way beyond just music. And he knew a lot about law, politics, human nature. You know, this guy was like a sage.
Bassist Chip Jackson played in the Billy Taylor Trio for many years, along with drummer Winard Harper.
He was a product of his time. I think he fits at that table with Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Imam Mufti Muhammad. Those people, they embodied so much integrity and what I think we all should still aspire to be.
Dr. Taylor served as the first artistic director for jazz at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. from 1994 until his death in 2010. After that, pianist Jason Moran followed in his footsteps.
Dr. Billy Taylor was the aggregator of all histories that have had to do with, let's say, black music in America. And since he comes around during the middle of the 20th century, he's able to kind of pivot to birthing a new generation of musicians. And so he helped always tell the story of black music in America. And he told it from the piano, and somehow he was able to distill the language that was always appropriate for expressing the construction and the emotion of the music.
I had the privilege to play with Dr. Taylor on many occasions, like this song, Looking Up, one of more than 300 of the compositions Dr. T wrote. They range in style and form, from gospel to swing and bebop and classical. His signature tune was written, with help from Dick Dallas, for his daughter Kim, in an effort to teach her about her own musical legacy and gospel music.
She was very young and very bored at this whole discussion, but I persisted, and I said, it's so much a part of our tradition that I can even make up a song that expresses that. So I improvised something, which ultimately turned out to be I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. The funny part about it is it took me about 15 minutes to write the first verse and the melody, which is only 16 bars, and then it took me a year and a co-writer to finish it.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free.
Nina Simone's 1967 recording is the most popular version of this unofficial anthem of the civil rights movement.
I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear for the whole round.
In the early 1940s, Dr. Taylor was already an accomplished pianist with a firm grasp on the popular swing era style of jazz. He just graduated from Virginia State College, moved to New York City, and ventured out to basement clubs on 52nd Street. The whole history of jazz was there, and Dr. Taylor got to hear the Count Basie Big Band, Chick Webb, and more. But he had a chance to play, too. His first major gig was with saxophonist Ben Webster's band and he eventually worked with almost all of the jazz greats of that era. Young musicians like Dizzy Gillespie, Thelonious Monk, and Max Roach were experimenting with complex harmonies and complicated rhythms in all-night jam sessions. Billy sat in on piano for many of those sessions and quickly adapted to the new style which we now know as bebop. He even wrote the first book on bebop. Here's Dr. Taylor on Morning Edition in 1996.
What was happening to the music was that it was being expanded on every front, melodically, harmonically, and rhythmically. That's the seventh chord, first note, second note, fifth note, and seventh note. If you take the chord further, and this is what the beboppers did, they took the upper partials, 9, 11, 13. So you get the chord. Now, if you change the 11th, and that's really what they were doing.
See what I mean? That's what Dr. Taylor would say. Now let's hear him play. This is an original inspired by and dedicated to bebop master Charlie Parker. It's called Bird Watcher.
Thank you. Dr. Billy Taylor and friends.
Thank you so very much.
You can't tell the story of Dr. Taylor without mentioning his lovely wife of 64 years, Teddy. He always said that his many accomplishments wouldn't have been possible without her support. Their life together was like a fairy tale, and they loved each other deeply. He dedicated this beautiful ballad to her. Recorded live at the Kennedy Center in 2001, Theodora, performed by the Billy Taylor Trio with Russell Malone on guitar. When we return, we're going to hear more about the life and contributions of Dr. Billy Taylor. This is Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Welcome back to Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. This week, we're celebrating Dr. Billy Taylor and his countless accomplishments. His remarkable career spans 7 decades, and though he slowed down in his later years, he never fully retired. He was still performing when he died in 2010 at the age of 89. To mark his centennial, we have concert performances from the Kennedy Center, plus reflections from those who knew him well, like pianist Jason Moran.
I remember the first moment meeting Dr. Billy Taylor. I was in Houston as a high school student at the High School for Performing and Visual Arts, and Dr. Taylor came to our school to give a masterclass. And I took my big video camera to school and videotaped him giving this masterclass. He'd have this kind of like thing he'd ask the audience. He'd say, give me 3 notes. And then he'd say, well, you say C, F sharp, and G. Okay, right. And then he'd go to the piano and make up an entire song based on C, F sharp, and G. Seeing him do that, like, changed me. I watched the tape over and over again as a high school student and saying, oh, I want to be like that, you know? I want to have that much at my grasp, you know, and also be able to talk to students about it too and get them hype about it.
No matter if Dr. T was teaching or performing, his distinctive bell-like sound always resonated from his piano.
Dr. Taylor had a pretty distinct piano touch. It was like always crystal clear, just like his language, just how he spoke, you know, just like his glasses. So he had this touch, this piano touch that was always kind of piercing, right? But it wasn't like abrasive either. It somehow just was like just enough. That part of his piano touch is also what lets him access the different histories of the piano so easily too. He's able to distill kind of what is necessary to play that information effectively.
Surrounded by a musical family, young Dr. Taylor studied classical music, took piano lessons, and sang in the choir at his grandfather's church. He later coined the phrase, "Jazz is America's classical music," and dedicated his life to spreading the message that jazz should be taken as seriously as traditional European classical music. He wrote this piece for piano and orchestra, but also played it with his trio. Hear how he exploits some of the colors that are orchestral in texture, but apply it to the piano.
Thank you.
Suite for Piano and Orchestra by Dr. Billy Taylor. He was proud of that piece and said it was one of the best things he'd ever written. Author Teresa Reed.
The sophistication, the synthesis of his classical background with all of the best and all of the forward-looking things in what you would associate with jazz, his ability to create music that introduced the gentleman in a kind of music that had been previously associated with kind of folks who weren't doing their best and in some cases were considered kind of the dregs of society. I mean, jazz is what you did if you weren't, you know, doing what your parents wanted, what you wanted to do. But he introduced that sophistication
and a respectability that was and still is rare. Dr. Billy Taylor was a gentleman of jazz and an ambassador of all kinds of music, really. Like this next Taylor composition, Totoro, written for the Haitian drummer Tororo. Percussionist Tito Puente liked the song and made a record that was so good, everybody thought Tito Puente wrote it. And that's how it became known as Totoro. Thank you. That was swinging, right? And the sound was full with the density and clarity all at the same time. It's hard to believe there were only three musicians. Drummer Winard Harper with that outstanding drum solo, and Chip Jackson on bass, perfectly complementing Dr. Taylor's left hand on piano. When we return, we'll hear how his advocacy and work lives on today. This is Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. You're listening to Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. On this show, we're celebrating Dr. Billy Taylor's centennial and 50 years of NPR. It's a moment to reflect on Dr. Taylor's contributions to public radio. It would take a full series of Jazz Night episodes to explain the impact Dr. Billy Taylor has had on jazz today. But much of his work to promote the music happened on the airwaves.
Jazz is a way of playing music and a repertory of pieces that defines that way of playing as it's developed over the years.
His series, Taylor Made Piano, was actually a radio adaptation of his doctoral dissertation.
What is jazz, and how did it come to be what it is today?
In 1958, he was named the musical director of this first public television series ever produced about jazz. The subject is jazz.
This program, performance, featuring Billy Taylor.
In the early 70s, Dr. Taylor was named musical director for the daily television program, The David Frost Show.
Not to mention my orchestra leader and my friend, Mr. William Edward Taylor. Okay, Billy?
And in the early 80s, Dr. Taylor brought his passion to CBS Sunday Morning. In 20 years' time, he contributed over 250 features to the program.
Dr. Billy Taylor is here to talk about Wynton Marsalis, a young trumpet player I frankly never heard of. How did you hear about him?
Well, a friend of mine, Art Blakey, who's one of the grand masters of jazz.
His Jazz Alive series broadcast for 6 years and in the early 80s became the third most listened to NPR show behind Morning Edition and All Things Considered.
Hi, I'm Billy Taylor. On our next Jazz Alive, I get to play the music of Duke Ellington.
Billy Taylor's show, Jazz at the Kennedy Center, also ran for 6 years.
This is a program where we play some, talk some, give you insights into America's classical music, jazz.
He had a long and joyful relationship with NPR. Dr. Taylor's radio career actually started when he was a freshman in college in downtown Petersburg, Virginia. Back then, it was a segregated world, and in his autobiography, Dr. Taylor said, "The beauty of radio was that you could become known for your talent while remaining anonymous. Had audiences been able to see that at that time I was African-American, my skin color might have been a distraction to many people, especially in the South. But radio gave me access to listeners who enjoyed my music, who judged me only with their ears and hearts. And that's the way it should have been."
He lived through segregation, and yet he was an associate of white people at a time when it was unusual for black people and white people to be peers in a social setting.
Teresa Reed was the ghostwriter for Dr. Taylor's autobiography.
He was ahead of his time in his advocacy for women. Way before it was a thing, Dr. Taylor was fiercely protective of the right of women to emerge as artists on par with their male counterparts. He was an advocate and he was a champion.
Dr. Billy Taylor wrote this composition we're hearing right now. His name was Martin, as a part of a suite he wrote for Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. Taylor's advocacy for civil rights was evident in his music and in other ways, too. He co-founded the Jazzmobile, the original traveling jazz stage in New York City.
The opportunity to listen to some good jazz. Some of us can't afford the prices, okay? You know, so they bring it uptown where it started from, all right? And they let you have it here, and you have the vendors, and it's like an African marketplace. So it's wonderful. I love it.
thousands of people would come to Jazzmobile. Right, this is Dr. Taylor's invention, you know, making sure that the music stays in the neighborhood.
Pianist Jason Moran.
And so I got to New York, and I went outside my dorm, and I saw all these folks, New York black folks, you know, all kinds of food being served, clothes being sold, music being played, you know. I was like, this is the community.
His group, the Jazzmobile All-Stars, played the first roving concert in 1954.
We would start at a given location, for instance, 127th and Lenox Avenue, and we'd go in a 10-block radius, come back to 127th and Lenox and play a concert. Well, in that 10-block trip, we drew a crowd. I mean, there'd be thousands of people who followed along, listening to the music. The kids were kind of running up and down and clapping hands in time with the music, and the people were on rooftops and on fire escapes and so forth. So one of the things that we tried to do was to play mainstream jazz for the most part. But the styles are quite different, and they appeal to different audiences. As a matter of fact, we try to match the player with the neighborhood that we have the player in.
Without any further ado, I would like to introduce you to Mongo Santa Maria. Mongo!
It was magical because it was Harlem. That was a major part of understanding what legacy means to communities, what legacy means to the future, what it means to gather, especially now to think about in hindsight. But that he was making sure that that stayed a part of Harlem history, you know, was Jazzmobile.
No matter where Jazzmobile went, there was always a party. That reminds me of another point Dr. Taylor emphasized, that jazz is dance music.
Thank you.
local color. Can you dig it? From Dr. Taylor's popular Urban Griot album. I love Winara Harper's tight hip-hop rhythms and Chip Jackson's funkified bass. I'd like to read what Dr. Taylor wrote in the liner notes for this album. I sometimes think of myself as an American griot, an urban griot, if you will. In African tradition, a griot is a historian, a storyteller, the custodian of doctrines, practices, rites, and customs. He is often a well-trained professional entertainer who passes on the information he has acquired over a lifetime to make life better for those who might learn from his knowledge and experience.
You know, when you think of the wise man on top of the mountain, that's how I think of a guy like Billy.
Chip Jackson.
You know, he just was brimming with knowledge and with empathy and with feeling and sensitivity. And of course, it all came out in his music, but also in his personal conversation and his friendship. You know, having somebody like him as a friend, not just being like his bass player and member of the band, but to have him as a friend was an honor. Huge.
One of the biggest things that I remembered about him really wasn't to do with the music. It was that he was a decent human being, one of the best human beings.
Winard Harper.
He had time for everybody. And when he talked to you, he really paid attention to what they were saying, which is, you know, it's a hard thing to do. Sometimes we'd be like, yeah, man, I really got to go. You know, but Doc would, you know, he would really pay attention and focus on people. So he was a good human being. And if we walked away with that, you know, for a lot of people, especially right now, that would be something else.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. It took on a life of its own because it spoke a message that really is timeless.
Teresa Reed.
You could play that song and it fits today. When you think about voter suppression and over-policing and mass incarceration and all of the things that we see playing out in the latest iteration of the struggle for equality, that song, it still fits. It still takes you to church. It still expresses frustration and hope at the same time.
And that song, of course, means a lot for a lot of people in a lot of ways, and will never go out of style.
Jason Moran.
Unfortunately, oppression is a thing that continues to be birthed over and over again. And so does liberation. So the song kind of is a reminder of that, you know, of the way he sets it in the key of F, which is, you know, the key about family. He sets the song in a way that allows people to hear it and perform it and still feel liberation in the chords. Chords of liberation are often about the resolution, you know? So they go through a series of changes. They always resolve to show you where home is and to not be afraid of home. No matter if the windows don't have no curtains on them, you know what I mean? The dishes ain't washed, right? None of that, right? And yeah, sometimes they feel like the black church, you know? So these songs often have that edge on them and they lean us forward to look for the resolution.
Dr. Billy Taylor, rare, unequaled, distinctive, and matchless, a tireless educator and mentor, an ambassador, a gentleman, and giant of jazz, always looking forward, always pushing us to do better. Jazz Night in America is a production of WBGO, Jazz and Lincoln Center, and NPR Music. Special thanks to Teresa Reed, Chip Jackson, Winard Harper, Jason Moran, and Kevin Struthers. This week's episode was written and produced by Saraya Muhammad. Our team includes Alex Arif, Sarah Giletti, and Trevor Smith. Katie Simon is our senior producer. Keith Jenkins is the senior director of NPR Music. Executive producers are Gabrielle Armand and Anya Grundman. To hear this show again, visit npr.org/jazznight. I'm Christian McBride.